The Battle of Gettysburg took place over 3 days and resulted in 56,000 casualties in those 3 days, 12,000 in 45 minutes at Pickett's Charge, and was really the turning point in the American Civil War.
Well, Ted, wasn't the first shot fired at the McPherson barn?
The first day's fighting started on McPherson Ridge, and my great-grandfather had a farm on 90 acres outside of town, and that is where the conflict started here at Gettysburg.
That's amazing. And then the barn itself was used as a hospital after everything was over.
That's right. And the barn is still maintained, still standing. It was used as a hospital for soldiers from both sides during the conflict here.
People who grew up away from that area just don't quite have the concept of what it's like walking around and you see, over there is where this shot was fired. And you grew up with that stuff. It really brings it home, doesn't it?
It did, and it's 6,000 acres. So to be able to play on sites like Little Round Top or Walk Pickett's Charge, as people do from all over the world, is really inspiring and quite remarkable. It's a very special place, and I encourage all your listeners to visit.
There are a lot of visitors there now. It must be a madhouse.
We have between 200,000 and 300,000 people over the next 10 days in this town of 7,500 people. People are having a good time. They're doing all kinds of events. There are probably 400 events here in the 10 days. We issued 400 media credentials the other day. There are about 12 satellite trucks lined up in town. So this event is a worldwide event. There's a lot of reenacting going on. There are a lot of camps with people pitching tents and so forth. And so it's been great so far with more to come.
Tell me about the reenactments. How realistic does it get and how loud does it get?
It gets loud. The cannons fire. They do it on fields outside of town. This year we'll have between 15 and 20,000 reenactors. Large bleachers are set up where people can observe. It's very authentic, in part because the battlefield itself has been restored over the last decade or so by the removal of trees, for example, that weren't there at the time of the battle, and the replanting of trees that were. So the lines of sight and visibility are very authentic here.
Why do you think the Battle of Gettysburg is so interesting to people? Was it because that was as far north as the South got, or just that was the turning point of the war?
I think it's because people realize that the period of American history from 1860 through the 13th Amendment, which abolished slavery, really in this country was a new birth of freedom. And the issue was to whether to expand slavery into the new Western territories. But it led, of course, to all kinds of rights of citizens, including women's rights, the opening of the country for immigration. And so it really is all about freedom here, and that rings so true today as it did in that era.
Ted, you talk about all those sites. A lot of them were used to play as a kid, I guess. You know, Little Round Top, Wheatfield, Peach Orchard. I don't know how much of that has been lost and how much of it, as you had mentioned, is actually just about the way it was.
Well, no, the battlefield is very open, and it doesn't cost anything to go on it. So you have 6,000 acres that people are free to tour and walk and ride horses, and certain sites are maintained very carefully, but it's a wide open area, and people come all year long. It's a terrific destination, and it's great for kids to learn, particularly since the new visitor center and museum opened in 2008, which is 140,000 square feet on 100 acres that houses films, artifacts, a million artifacts to be exact, and the restored cyclorama painting, which is 350 feet in circumference and 57 feet high, done in the 1880s, which is just a stunning painting of Pickett's Charge.
With Jim Thornton, I'm Diane Thompson, and we're talking to Ted McPherson, fourth-generation Gettysburg resident, about the 150th anniversary of the Civil War battle in that small Pennsylvania town. Pickett's Charge on Day 3 brought the battle to an end.
It did, and we have various groups, corporate executives, school children, urban city principals, school principals, and when they walk that mile across and see what the Confederate Army did and the courage displayed really on both sides at that battle, it's really quite remarkable.
If you could bring back General Lee and General Meade and those other soldiers and just say, look at it today, you kind of wonder what they would say. It was a halfway point or so of the war, all these losses, over 200,000, I think, up till then. I mean, I wonder if they knew what they were in for.
Well, I think Lee was a gambler. He'd been on a winning streak, winning several battles prior to Gettysburg. He wanted a victory on northern soil, particularly from a political standpoint, to turn the citizenry against the war, to try to end it, and to cut off Washington. And I think he probably told those troops before they went across that field, if we can take that ridge a mile across, we can all go home. And the, so it's really a remarkable sight throughout these acres. Think of it this way. The Civil War had 620,000 casualties. That's 2% of the population at the time. That'd be the equivalent of 6 million people today. And with the loss of Vicksburg on July 4th, the day after Gettysburg, that really is the turning point of the war. That's the climax of the Civil War. Everything that follows really was irreversible.
That's right. Gettysburg on the 3rd, that ended then, and then Vicksburg on the 4th. So, boom, boom.
Yeah, you had the victory at Gettysburg in the north by the Union forces, and you had the logistics interrupted by the Southern troops with the fall of Vicksburg up through the Mississippi River and so forth. The Confederate Army was tremendously heroic here. You had men from Texas, Alabama, Mississippi, Louisiana. The Texans came from 23 miles away on the morning of the second day with out all having shoes, not enough water, wearing heavy uniforms, having been on the march, and go into battle that afternoon against Little Round Top. Now, that's astonishing. And there are just hundreds and thousands of examples of courage like that throughout the war, and all wars, really. But this one was Americans, all Americans, and it really was about a new birth of freedom.
You know, being a kid in West Virginia growing up, we used to go through Virginia and down through the South all the time. And I remember going around these sites, and I didn't really have an appreciation for it then. But I would imagine, hopefully, kids these days growing up around where you are, you can bring it home to them.
Well, I'm not sure the kids today get the education. If you pick up a textbook, you'll find maybe a half a page on the Civil War. You might not even find Gettysburg mentioned. And so that's the importance of this educational venue that I referred to, the Visitor Center and Museum. We can handle 150 buses in one day in this venue. And often kids, when they come on school trips to Washington in the spring, will come to Gettysburg for a day. And so there's a tremendous educational impact for all generations for seeing what took place at, and understanding what took place at Gettysburg within the context and consequences of the American Civil War.
And something people don't really talk about is the aftermath of the Battle of Gettysburg, when you had all these dead bodies and dead animals, and you had this town of just a few thousand people to deal with it?
It was a catastrophic event for Gettysburg, which at the time had a population of about 2,500 people, and it took years for Gettysburg to recover. And that's why Lincoln came 4 months after the Battle of Gettysburg to dedicate the first National Cemetery, and that's where he gave the Gettysburg Address. But the purpose of that was to explain the reasons for this conflict and the preservation of the Union. And so he spoke in 2 minutes and gave that address following Edward Everett, the president of Harvard's, two-hour address. So Lincoln did in 2 minutes what the world remembers, and no one knows what the predecessor speaker did in 2 hours.
Yeah, that is ironic.
When did your ancestor move there? When did the family move to Gettysburg?
Well, the McPhersons came from Scotland here in 1738. So our granddaughter, who is visiting with us here this weekend, is the sixth generation to live in this house, or to use this house, which was built in 1870 by my great-grandfather, Edward McPherson, who served two terms in the United States Congress during Lincoln's time, and then was clerk of the house for 17 years. And if you saw Steven Spielberg's recent movie, Lincoln, when they count the votes in that movie for the 13th Amendment, Edward McPherson is the clerk of the house in that movie.
And he had a speaking role.
He had a speaking role. That's right.
I feel kind of left out. I haven't ever been up there. I don't know why, but I just didn't spend a lot of time in Pennsylvania there. You know, western West Virginia is where I'm from, but I'll have to go check it out.
Jim, I know you'd enjoy it. You really would. It's a very special place, and I think you'd enjoy every aspect of it. Plus, it's in a very rural, pretty part of the state of south-central Pennsylvania.
Oh, yeah, it's beautiful there.
Every time I go back, I learn something new.
Yeah.
Every time.
Yeah, yeah.
And, of course, President Eisenhower had his farm here. He and Mamie lived in 35 homes during his career as an Army officer, and this is the only home they ever owned. And Camp David, which is about 10 or 12 miles from Gettysburg, was renamed. It was originally called Shangri-La, but renamed for his grandson, David. And General Eisenhower, subsequently President Eisenhower, would bring world leaders such as Khrushchev and de Gaulle to Gettysburg. And his strategy was if he could bring them to his farm and have Mamie give them a home-cooked meal, they'd relax outside the formal stiffness of Washington, D.C., and he often got whatever issue solved that he wanted to by doing that.
That is really, really cool. Yeah, it's a neat thing. I don't know if you've heard of Pamplin Park. It's south of Richmond. It's a little way south of Richmond. I forget the battle it was there, but we did this Civil War camp. You know, our son was 10 a few years ago, 6 years ago, and it was just so much fun. It was hotter than blazes, but my wife and son and I camped out there in the little sort of barracks thing. It was 96 degrees, I think, but a good time. Not far from Appomattox, and we visited all those sites and stuff, too.
Appomattox is a special place, but I know how much fun you have doing it with your son and camping out. It's great fun to do that together. Appomattox, the same officer here, Joshua Chamberlain, who, from Maine, who defended the south end of Little Round Top so heroically, was selected to manage the Union soldiers at Appomattox, and he instructed his soldiers not to cheer when the surrender took place. And so he set a tone by paying great respect to the Southern Army at that event at Appomattox.
Now, I remember that story, and you consider what had happened, and it was amazing that they were able to, you know, everybody was restrained, and it was as gentlemanly as they could be, and, yeah, it's an amazing testament to the human condition that they were able to do that in the backdrop of all the brothers and family members who'd been killed. And the terrible treatment of the Union soldiers down south, and you know all the stories.
Well, as a veteran myself, I know how difficult and the horror of war. But the reconciliation, the preservation of the United States of America under Lincoln is really a remarkable feat. And we often encourage visiting politicians who deal with today's issues to think about what Lincoln had to deal with. And for them today to serve as effectively as he did in this country.